This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, happy Thursday. We're going to pretend it's Wednesday. It's middays with Mark today. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. So happy to have you with us. Congressman Mark Pocan will be with us for the hour in our first hour. We've got Professor Richard Wolff is going to be with us in our second hour. We've a few other things throughout the day, and there's a lot of news that we're going to be getting to. But first, it's time for Middays with Mark. Congressman Mark Pocan, representing the 2nd District of Wisconsin. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. His website is pocan.house.gov, P-O-C-A-N, and you can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
H.R. 1, House Resolution 1, this is literally the first piece of legislation that Democrats have put into the House of Representatives. And by the way, just for anybody who might be tuning in who has never listened to the program before, when I say Middays with Mark, what I'm talking about is Congressman Pocan is with us for the hour, taking your calls on whatever topic you want to discuss. And our number is 202-808-9925. So anyhow, back to H.R. 1. This is the first piece of legislation, and I heard a rumor this morning that literally 100% of all the Democrats in the House of Representatives are on board with this piece of legislation. If that's true, this has got to be a mind-bogglingly extraordinary piece of legislation. Is it true, and can you tell us what this is?
Yes, it is. I mean, let me make two major points. One, there's a few stories that Democrats are in disarray over this issue or that issue. This is the first bill we've introduced. It's an election, campaign finance, and ethics reform bill with serious reforms in the bill, things that we've talked about in this program for years, Tom, and every single Democrat is signed on as a co-author of the bill, which is extraordinary. So, one, to me, that's extraordinary unity among the Democrat caucus. Two, contrast this last session. What was H.R. 1 under Paul Ryan? His tax cut for the wealthiest in this country, and it took him almost a full first year to get that done.
Yeah.
So, this is a real contrast in, what it means to have Democrats and Republicans in charge. This is a bill that does all sorts of things to make sure that people will be able to vote, gets rid of the purging of names, the interstate cross-check, make sure we have paper ballots on electronic machines, unmasked dark money, goes after a bunch of the ethics abuses of this administration. It is a serious, significant bill. I've got a couple amendments I'm still adding this afternoon. We're getting tax returns in this. I mean, there's so much. And I think, this is a good sign of what happened in November when people came out and we flipped the majority. We know that it's due to all the scandals and ethics problems here in Washington, D.C., and we're addressing it.
So why would it be that a piece of legislation that advances clean government, essentially, simply advances clean government would be partisan? I mean, why is that something that Democrats would all sign on to and Republicans would all oppose? Or am I wrong in assuming that all the Republicans oppose this?
Well, I mean, I think in real people, this would be like people would say, why would you oppose most of the stuff that's in here, right? It's common sense, good government issues. But there's an amendment to say that Republicans have an amendment to say we support Citizens United. As a standing. So, they're doing it from a very partisan perspective. They're doing it to protect the special interests and lobbyists in Washington. They're doing it.
Wait a second. You said the Republicans have an amendment to say that they support what?
Citizens United.
Citizens United? Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just goofy, and we'll be voting on that, and it's not going to pass because we're in charge. But
sure.
This is to show you where they come at from this issue, and they're trying to protect the
image. So they love dark money, and which makes sense. I mean, they're principally the Republican Party seems to be there just to do whatever the billionaires and the big corporations tell them to do. In fact, my understanding, and you were one of the guys who really informed us on this back when you were in the legislature in Wisconsin, and you went to that ALEC meeting, and you called our show from that ALEC meeting, and literally. Big corporations lobbyists seem to be writing perhaps the majority of the legislation that Republicans are introducing at both at the state and federal level all across the country.
Yeah, I mean, there it was brazen, right? Every committee was made up of half legislators and half industry people, and you needed a majority vote of both. I mean, you actually had the corporations that you're writing legislation for voting on their legislation. That's how ridiculous that was. But here, it's a bit more discreet, except for all the incredible amounts of big money that come into people's campaigns and the influence it has here. And a bill like this is really outstanding. I mean, John Sarbanes has been an advocate for years and years and years on this. I really give him a lot of credit for shepherding this, but I give credit to Leader Pelosi as well, because this became H.R. 1. And the Progressive Caucus made this a priority, and a lot of members of all different political stripes have stood up for it. And this is, again, when you look at certain stories saying there's disunity among Democrats, the reason those stories are out there is because 100% of our caucus is on H.R. 1, and we're passing it 2 months after we get sworn in.
Amazing. Well, the phone lines are lighting up literally from coast to coast, so shall we get started?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Nettie in how do you pronounce that town in Wisconsin?
Shiocton.
Shiocton. Great. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Congressman, I want to congratulate you and Pramila Jayapal from the Congressional Progressive Caucus for having a forum yesterday with Andrew Bacevich. We need to rethink our role in the Middle East, and that's a great step forward. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We had a forum yesterday, Tom, with people like Katrina VanNeuvel and a bunch of other folks who have been outspoken progressive thinkers in the foreign policy realm. We are beefing up what we do. We actually have a full-time fellow for our caucus just working on this. All the work around Yemen has come out of the Progressive Caucus. Now we're trying to do some work around Venezuela because there's some countervailing forces that could, you know, dip us into a military intervention. We don't want to see that. So we're really proud. As a caucus, we've been doing a lot of work in this effort. And Nettie, thanks so much for recognizing it.
Cool. Kathy in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. Hi, Tom. I'd like to know what you guys are working on in order to protect our vote a little bit better this time. I have friends who believe that their vote doesn't count and kind of was proven last time. So I'd like to know what's being done about that, and thank you.
Yeah, Kathy, so again, you know, H.R. 1, this is a classic example. The bill that we're going to pass tomorrow on the floor, today we're finishing amendments, automatic voter registration, same-day voter registration, prohibiting voter roll purges, paper ballots with electronic voting machines, expanding early voting and voting by mail, providing funding so that people can actually do this, ending partisan gerrymandering, assisting the Election Assistance Commission, and additional election security measures. That's just the election portion of this, not counting the campaign finance or ethics portion. So there's a lot we're putting out there. We're going to break this into little bills, too, and send those to the Senate. But this is probably, clearly, by being H.R. 1, it is the biggest priority of the Democrats. This is the reason why we were put in the majority in November, and we're going to fight for these issues very hard.
And this isn't like some totally radical thing that's going to outlaw ALEC or anything like that, is it?
No. I mean, this is just, it's really on the election stuff. It's what I just mentioned. I mean, but things that are all great practices.
Wisconsin, just straightforward stuff that has been law in the past and in many cases.
Yeah. I mean, these are all things that are best practices from around the country. And if we can implement this, to make sure that everyone has the ability to be able to vote.
Extraordinary. H.R. 1. Be sure, I would assume, if particularly if somebody's represented by a Republican, to be sure to call the Congress at 202-224-3121 and tell them to go with H.R. 1, Congressman.
Absolutely, much appreciated.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, we'll be back with more of Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour on Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Congressman Pocan, along with Pramila Jayapal, are the two co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and you can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. And welcome back. Lowell in Salem, Oregon. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hello, Congressman Pocan and Tom. I have a question about why progressives are using means testing in some of their policy proposals. For example, Elizabeth Warren's child care proposal only helps people up to 200% of the federal poverty level. And the federal poverty level is so low that you can't afford to live. And 200%, you're still desperate. 80% of the workforce lives paycheck to paycheck. So assistance needs to be universal. And the rich people can decide not to use it.
Yeah, I can't speak for Elizabeth Warren, sorry, I can't answer that. I can tell you that, you know, we have universal child care as a provision for the Progressive Caucus. That's a priority. We have a number of provisions that don't go means-tested, some that do, because in some cases it makes sense. A lot of us, Social Security, would like to lift the cap and, you know, raise what we take in from people who make more than, I think it's $126,000 now, so we address it that way. But I can't speak for Elizabeth Warren's proposal, but I can tell you, Lowell, you know, many of the proposals we put out there, we're trying to be far more universal. Universal child care is an aspect that we've put out there as a Progressive Caucus.
Jack in Studio City, California, watching Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Jack.
My question is, on your wonderful list of election reform items, what about getting rid of the Electoral College?
Yeah, I mean, that's not on there right now. I think there is a bill that is being drafted to do just that, and I think there has been in past sessions, but I can't say that 100%. But this is one that, I mean, really is just, it's so easy to say, why didn't you have this, when I like to look at the glass being nine-tenths full, which is all this great stuff in there. That to get every single Democrat in the caucus, and we have a diverse caucus on board, is truly just short of amazing. And the fact that we're able to put this out there and draw that sharp contrast, I think is significant. So, you know, I can't tell you why it's not here. I'm not the main author of the bill, although many of my provisions are in the bill. But I do think that we've got some really extraordinary stuff in here that is going to go really far to making sure that people will have the proper ability to vote, make sure that we're addressing campaign finance abuses, and to deal with some ethics issues that are clearly lacking, especially when it comes to this administration.
FYI, we just have 40 seconds to the break here. I'm writing a book, The Hidden History of Voting in the United States. And so I was digging into this yesterday, literally yesterday. And the last time that there was a proposed constitutional amendment to end the Electoral College, it was twice in the 20th century, 1934 and 1976, as I recall, maybe 79. And the one in 34 was two votes short of the two-thirds majority in the Senate necessary to pass it out and send it to the states. It had passed the House with two-thirds, but it failed by two votes in the Senate. The one in the 70s, however, passed the Senate 51 to 48, as I recall, but nothing close to that two-thirds majority. So that's going to be a big lift.
Yeah, but it's an idea that I think is a proper idea, especially given where populations are now.
Absolutely, especially after both George W. Bush and Donald Trump, you know, wouldn't have been presidents if we simply counted the votes of the people, you know, all the votes nationwide. We'll be right back with more of Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls in just a moment. Welcome back. Congressman Mark Pocan with us taking your calls for the hour. Middays with Mark on the Tom Hartman program. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Morning, Congressman Pocan. We spoke a couple years ago. I'm the Madison native with family ties to Kenosha and stuff, and I know that's where you're from. And just a quick shout out to Tanuta's on 52nd Street there, great deli.
There you go.
What I'm calling about today, Congressman Pocan, is Jim Langevin, Democrat in Rhode Island. He introduced a bill, and so Tammy Baldwin is also doing it in the Senate, introducing legislation to protect the rights of disabled airline passengers. Where I'm going with this is I've had 10 knee surgeries over the past 45 years. And the seats in the airports, they're quite low. They have disabled seating for people, but the problem with it is they're all the same height as other seats. And what's really needed for people with knee issues and other mobility issues is raised or higher seats in the airports.
Or adjustable seats, Steve?
I'm sorry?
Or adjustable seats that can be raised and lowered to meet your needs?
Yes, I believe that's you, Tom. Yes, that would work. That would be helpful because it's very hard to get up and stuff like that. And if you could co-sign on to this bill and try to work on that. And also, I have to have wheelchairs to get from one end of the airport to the other because I can't stand or sit very long on account of my knees. Sometimes the waiting time for that is quite long too. if that could be helped to be sped up. But anyways, that's what I wanted to say, Congressman, and I thank you for all your good work.
Yeah, no, thank you, Steve. And I will definitely take a look at the bill. Yeah, obviously, Senator Baldwin, very close to, known her for decades, and Jim Langevin, have great respect for and what you're saying makes a lot of sense. In fact, I think one of the other issues I'd be interested in at some point is, you know, I notice seats keep shrinking, especially with some airlines. And, you know, I'm not a small guy, but I'm not a big guy, and I can barely fit in there, and I can imagine if people had some mobility issues, how difficult that would be, and I'll have to look to see if that's addressed in there as well. But thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, these airline monopolies are squeezing us, both literally and metaphorically.
We had a great conversation, Tom. Robert Reich met with members of the Progressive Caucus a couple nights ago for dinner.
Uh-huh.
We had a great conversation around antitrust, which
yeah.
is exactly the issue with airlines. It's the issue with pharmaceutical companies. It's the issue with agribusiness, and I think you're going to see a lot of activity this session coming out on antitrust.
Did he point out Robert Bork's influence on the Supreme Court and how they, in the, I believe it was GTE Sylvania case in the 70s, changed the late 70s or early 80s, changed the Supreme Court's interpretation of what the antitrust laws mean?
You know, we were talking a little bit like what areas we thought were the best to put out first. So, like, for example, one thing I hadn't heard before around pharmaceuticals, we know there's pay to not play and things like that, but one that we weren't aware of is many pharmaceutical companies are buying generic manufacturers, but just under the threshold to report, and then they close them down, and they basically are taking away generic competition, because if you have one generic competitor, the price of your drug on average goes down 6%. You get two, it goes down 48%, and you go down even more when you have three. So what they're doing is they're buying the companies and getting rid of them that could produce any challenge to them.
Right.
And it's just another way that they're, you know, basically going around the patent and antitrust laws.
Yeah. Well, just to fill you in on this real quickly, because I'm also writing a book on monopolies. I'm writing this book, series of 10 books for BK. And
oh, wow.
The first one is on guns. It's available for order now. The second one is on the Supreme Court. It can also be ordered at Amazon right now, but it's not going to be out for, you know, until the fall. And then the next one will be on voting. That'll be out next spring. And then the next one after that will be on monopolies. And what I learned was that prior to the 70s, our understanding and interpretation, and the Supreme Court's as well, and was that you would break up big monopolies if they were destroying competition, if they were harming communities, if they were monopolizing industries, if they were locking out the ability of small competitors to come into an industry. I mean, there was a whole bunch of things that we all understood. And Robert Bork came along, and this was before Reagan tried to put him on the Supreme Court. And he had a pretty good reputation at that point in time, other than being a right-wing crank and homophobe, and, you know, outspoken, actually, homophobe. But in any case, he came out and he said, really, if we're going to understand antitrust, we should only understand it in the context of the consumer. So a trust, or you know, a monopoly is only a monopoly if it causes prices to go up. So as long as prices remain low, there's no reason to break companies up. There's no reason to go after Walmart. There's no reason to go, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Supreme Court, and he pushed that for 15 years. He came up with this in the 60s. And the Supreme Court adopted that position in a case, I think it's called GTE Sylvania from the 70s. I'd have to go back and find my notes. And that's now essentially the law of the land. And the old ways that we enforce the antitrust laws no longer can be applied in many cases because of the Supreme Court decision. So legislation clarifying the intent of the original antitrust legislation and its antecedent and its followers would be really, really useful in that context.
No, that's great, Tom. Thank you for that, because this is something that's going to be a major focus. And if I can just add, you know, even last session, when the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee did a big poll, one of the things they polled was around antitrust, which, first of all, I was shocked that they even asked, but even more shocked that when they got it back, it was an extremely popular issue that people wanted to break up some of these companies, and they were impacted by this. So this is a very widespread, popular, beyond partisan affiliation issue. And we're going to make it more of a focus this session as a progressive caucus.
Yeah, and this bizarre Supreme Court decision is the only reason that you've got virtually every industry in the United States dominated by between three and five major corporations. Anyhow, back to our callers here. We have just 1 minute to the break. Inez in Villa Rica, Georgia. You have a quick question for Congressman Pocan? My apologies for how long-winded I was.
Why doesn't he run for president? I really like him. I like listening to him. I think he's an excellent speaker.
Inez, thank you. That's very kind of you. But I think we're going to have plenty of choices, plenty of good choices. And, you know, I just really love the work that I've been able to do for the Progressive Caucus. You know, Pramila Jayapal and I, she is just an amazing leader. We have taken the caucus to, I think, some new places. We're about to have about 21 staff between our 501c3 and 4 and inside the building entities from just having really two last session. There's a lot of good stuff happening. I got work to do here, but thank you, Inez. I appreciate the very kind comment.
Well, and you're a young guy. There's always 2024 and 2028. Congressman Mark Pocan is with us on the line for the hour, taking your calls. We call it Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, as well as representing brilliantly the 2nd District of Wisconsin in the U.S. House of Representatives. His website, Pocan, pocan.house.gov, and you can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And we will be back with your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. Welcome back. Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program, Congressman Mark Thursday edition. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. Ricky in Big Clifty, Kentucky. Hey, Ricky, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, this is Ricky. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep, I can hear you, Ricky.
I've been living in Kentucky, man, and I've been trying to get my right to vote back, right? Because I got the drug charge back in 1995. And they have not sent me my paperwork back, and it's been 8 months. I think Mitch McConnell's involved in it, too, because I'm the one that talks to Mitch McConnell every day, man, and tells him my opinions. So I just wonder if there's a, what you think about that. I mean, by the way, I'm nervous, too.
Yeah, Ricky, I mean, I think I would try to, you know, maybe contact your state representative or state senator, because I believe that's going to happen at the state level, getting the paperwork you're looking for. But you raise a bigger issue, which is there are so many people who have lost the franchise to vote for reasons that don't make sense. In Florida, that was a big vote they had in the November referendum to try to restore the franchise to many people. We need to do that far more aggressively across the country, and I hope that that's something we can get done. I don't know, with the Republican Senate and Trump in the White House, but hopefully if Democrats prevail well in 2020, we definitely need to move forward this. And right now we can move forward state by state.
Kelwin in Los Angeles, listening on KPFK. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hello, this is Kelwin Hagen. How you doing?
Very good, Kelwin. How are you?
Good, good. First, I want to thank you, Congressman and Tom. Always good to hear your show. What I wanted to call about is I love seeing all this action on national elections and people losing their right to vote and whatnot at large through the federal system. However, what I would question is there was a lot of irregularities, and the Democratic Party even has claimed that they sort of had a right to be biased in the primaries. What is being done inside the party to make sure that my vote for a progressive is protected both before I vote and after I vote in the primaries? As the I'm starting to see a lot of bias towards what I consider to be the less progressive candidates running for president right now, even inside the party. That's more important to me than the national election, because at the moment I consider the primaries to be my general election, because whether or not I vote for a Democrat isn't just because they're blue, but because they stand for what I believe. So I'd love to hear your take on that.
Sure, Kelwin. So, I mean, one thing I will give props to Tom Perez is that he did move forward and aggressively deal with the superdelegate problem, right? Was it 700 people that you know, could decide before a single vote was cast who they're supporting and really skew results? And we saw, I think, you know, the huge impact that had pro-Hillary Clinton in the last election, and now we don't have a vote as a superdelegate. I'm one of them as a member of Congress. So he lived up to his word and put that in place. Secondly, I know they're taking a look at state by state, because there is a difference between an open primary state like Wisconsin, a closed primary state with a really long lead time in order to even be able to vote like New York, and then a caucus state like Iowa. And, you know, those are all very different sort of vehicles, yet accomplish the same thing, pick who the primary winner is in any given state that's going to be going on to the convention. So I think they're still working on that aspect, but the superdelegate stuff, they did well, and they deserve kudos for that.
Steve in Perrysville, Indiana, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. I got a question about this deal in 2020. I think you got to have a new ID by October of 2020. And the way I understood it, well, I just got my new ID card because I'm legally blind, so I don't use a driver's license. But they said that there's going to be a star on it, and you can't get on an airplane or, I understood it, you couldn't vote without this ID card. And if that's the case, that's voter suppression.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the real ID laws that actually, I was still in the legislature when they were passed federally. It was kind of a response to a bunch of things that had happened previously. I can't answer that, unfortunately, because I don't know enough, Steve. I apologize specifically on how that is going to intersect with voting rights. Although I think it'd be hard to have, we don't have a single national ID for voting that I understand. I think there's still going to be state-by-state prerogatives, but I don't want to answer what I don't know, Steve. I apologize I wasn't here when that was created.
James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Long-time listener, first-time calling.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, gentlemen, for what you're doing. I wanted to interject something. This is just my personal opinion comment. The Postal Service 2006 was a creation from Congress that made them go into an overpayment, pre-funding for retirees. And that's a long story, so I'm just giving you that short brief. The overpayments, to my knowledge, are still there.
Yes.
And I just wanted to offer a suggestion where I feel like those overpayments should go. The fleet that right now currently lights up every day is the largest fossil fuel fleet that lights up every day. I'd like to see that money, the overpayment money, re-interjected into a new fleet of vehicles for the Postal Service. And that's just...
That are electric, James?
Comment.
Is that what you're talking about?
Let's go electric, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Amen.
That's
So, James, I think what you're referring to is it's not an overpayment. It's actually a prepayment of employee benefits 75 years into the future. No other federal agency has to do this. It's the reason why sometimes the Postal Service looks like it's losing money. I would argue there's other services we could give the Postal Service because it's a community place and you could have other community activities, including things like banking and other things that might make some sense to do that. But this is a prepayment of benefits 75 years into the future, and it's something that should go away because it's ridiculous. It's not like there's money you could maybe put into a fleet because right now it's prepaying the benefits, but it's also the reason why I think we have some struggles with the post office running and why some people have tried to cut back on delivery and other things. I would argue in the rural parts of America and rural parts of my district, which I have many, if you don't have internet and you don't have a post office, you can't be in business. And we've got to do everything we can to preserve the six-day postal delivery, preserve the door-to-door delivery, and make sure our post offices are running fluently. And that means getting rid of that prepayment provision. But I don't know if there's money to shift to something else with it.
Richard in Berkeley, California, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman.
Hi, Rick.
I'd like to know why it seems to me that the Democratic leadership is launching an all-out frontal assault on the progressive movement. They're attacking Bernie Sanders. They're attacking Ilhan Omar. They're attacking AOC. They're attacking Rashida Tlaib for all different reasons, but these are all progressives. The reason they're attacking them is not Islamophobia, is not anti-Semitism, is not double standard, is because they are progressives. And it's only because they're progressives. And the reason Tom Perez allowed this provision to not have the superdelegates vote on the first round is because they know Bernie's not going to win on the first round. So they know that superdelegates are going to decide the primaries. And nobody is fighting back against this, and I would like to know why.
So Richard, I'm seeing things differently than you. One, it's not Democratic leadership that's attacking people. This is the conservative movement. If you watch the CPAC conference they had last weekend, the conservative conference, Nancy Pelosi was always their person they attacked and they tried to demonize, and they realized after decades they haven't been real effective, and she's actually looked pretty good standing up to Donald Trump. So now they are going after Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar because, and I've said this to them, we've been on panels together, we've had this conversation, because they are smart women of color, young women, and in two of the three are Muslim women. It hits the every negative stereotype that conservatives put out there that try to make, you know, the white men who are afraid of giving up power, you know, get nervous. So it's really, there's a conservative attack on those three. They've shifted from Nancy Pelosi. And while we do have a problem right now that some of our Democrats are mad about, a comment that I think has been largely misconstrued that Ilhan said, it is not Democratic leadership that's leading the attack. This is what's coming from the outside. But if you look at the how deep these attacks are and how nasty they are, really follow social media on them, it's unbelievable what they're accusing these people of. We are trying to stand up. So yesterday when Steve Scalise said Ilhan shouldn't get access to intelligence classified data, we went after him. He's gone to white supremacist events. Like, is this something we're supposed to now say?
He's the guy who campaigned for office saying that he was David Duke without the hood.
Right. So see, he should get data when we're talking about race relations. I mean, we shouldn't go there. But this is a conservative attack on those three. The little issue we're dealing with on this resolution, it is going to be a resolution that attacks anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and white supremacy. And it's because of the attack on Ilhan in, was it West Virginia or North Carolina in the Capitol, where they had a poster of 9/11 and they had Ilhan in front. So we're going to address all of these issues. We're trying to put all the hate aside so we can go back to talking about the Democratic agenda. But I think my big difference, Richard, is it is an attack from the right. But you are right on those three people. It's not coming from Democratic leaders.
We live in amazing times. Congressman Mark Pocan is with us for the hour, taking your calls. It's Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. He's the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents the 2nd District of Wisconsin. His website is pocan.house.gov, and you can tweet him at Rep, as in Representative, R-E-P, Mark, M-A-R-K, Pocan.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
And back with your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. And welcome back. Samuel, listening on KPFK in Santa Ana, California. Samuel, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, sir. This is Samuel from Santa Ana. I own one share of stock in KPFK. Congressman,
good on you.
I am a person who is a part of a class action lawsuit. There were 12 of us, and we did $1 million lawsuit. I thought it was many more people. We got paid $18,000, and the lawyers got paid $982,000. I did not know that this was even legal. I've done a little bit of research. It turns out that there are other cases like this. There should be something saying that this is impossible, and I'm thinking it should be bipartisan. Republicans always have the smokescreen about tort reform, so I was thinking maybe you could get some legislation on that. This is literally, it's like legal theft.
Yes, I mean, I don't know at all any of the details of your case, but I mean, that does seem terribly astute. I completely agree on that front.
Okay, let's see here. Jeff in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hey, good morning, Tom and Congressman Pocan. Thank you both for doing what you do and for taking my call. My question for the Congressman concerns the Green New Deal. And may I just suggest we subtitle it The Plan to Make Our Infrastructure Great and Green, since infrastructure, along with health care and other and many other things, were big lies Trump told on the campaign trail. But anyway, you guys are both from the Great Lakes, and yesterday, Tom, you had a woman from Toledo talking about their efforts to protect Lake Erie from those from the toxic algae blooms, which are more and more prevalent all the way down to the Gulf Coast of Florida. And they're mostly caused from big agriculture and the runoff from chemical fertilizers. And along with poisoning our water with those chemicals, big ag is also saturating our food chain with carcinogenic pesticides. And I refer you guys to a piece in The Guardian from February 15th titled, What the Pesticides in Our Urine Tell Us About Organic Food. And so my question to you, Congressman Pocan, is can you introduce the idea of radically transforming how we grow our food free from chemicals and pesticides and try and put that as part of the Green New Deal?
Yeah, I think you raised a great point about there are so many aspects of things that could be directly related to the New Green Deal, right? And definitely our food supply and those issues and water quality are very clearly front and center. You know, I know that Earl Blumenauer has got an extensive piece about our food supply. I know Shelly Pingree from Maine also has been articulate around the organic food supply. So there are some people talking about those issues, but I have not seen a direct connection yet to the New Green Deal, and I think it's a great suggestion. So let me see what I can do as we move things forward with that.
By the way, your phone occasionally fades out, Congressman. I don't know exactly why. It's not a crisis, but it makes it hard to hear you sometimes. Is that why Rush Limbaugh is saying, or whoever it is saying, that the Green New Deal wants to ban our hamburgers because it's going to regulate intensive animal agriculture?
I never try to guess why they say any of the lies they say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but that was part of the conservative conference they brought the hamburgers together.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard it, I guess it was Sebastian Gorka, but I've heard it from a couple of different sources, and I thought, well, that's fine with me.
Sounds highly credible to me.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be right back with Congressman Mark Pocan taking your call. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Middays with Mark, Thursday edition here on the Tom Hartman Program. Maverick in Edmonds, Washington, listening on KBCS. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Well, good morning to both of you, and thank you for taking my call, Tom. I've been listening for about 3 years now, and I want to thank you. I feel like I'm more informed, and even maybe more important, I feel some optimism that I didn't have before I started listening to you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Congressman, I'm curious about the mechanics of calling up Congress. Why should I do it? Should I do it more than once? What happens? Am I going to leave a voicemail? If you could walk me through that process, that would be great. And once again, don't give up on the Trump investigation and go Packers if the Seahawks don't win.
Wow, you're hitting everything right. So, Maverick,
thank you.
Say this. Let me talk about the way I talk about the hierarchy of reaching out. I mean, first of all, you should always, if you have an opinion, contact your lawmakers, local, state, and federal, because we all keep lists of how many contacts we have. And if you think someone's voting with you, it's still important to have that count. And weekly, as a member of Congress, I see every contact that we've got by count on the issue, pro and con. So it really is important. Best way to contact the elected officials face-to-face, because you can have a real conversation. Second best is through a personal letter or call, telling your personal story. Email is the same thing as a personal letter these days, so that, in fact, it gets to us quicker if something is timely. The lower effective ways are those mass postcards and things that, I know the effort that went into it. We kind of give it that kind of a look. But, I can get two or three contacts on an issue to put something on a radar screen. So it really is important that you reach out to your elected officials, and even better, at a town hall or setting up a meeting, that face-to-face contact is without question the single best way. But do it, and we keep track of the numbers, and it does affect the legislation we introduce and how we vote.
I'd always figured if you were going to call your legislator, and I put that number out, 202-225-3121 or 224-3121 often, that you should be polite regardless of which party you're talking to. And you should only talk about a single topic, and you should get right to the point. It should be boiled down to less than a sentence, less than two or three sentences at the most, so that the person taking the call, who's not going to want to debate you or anything else, can simply summarize it and pass it along. Is that reasonable advice, or is there anything you'd add to that?
No, and the only thing, just realize, it is probably an intern that's answering the phone.
Right.
So when they don't, sometimes people do want to debate, they may not be the most informed, but they're taking down all the information, and I will get all that information, but if you start a debate, you might lose what you initially called for. So I think what you said is great advice.
Yeah, okay, great. Tony, in Watsonville, California, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Tony?
Tony.
Good morning. Thank you, gentlemen. I have a question about national security. My concern is if the Trump family gets incarcerated or gets caught with what they're doing, if they'll still get protected for life, because if they're jet-setting around the world and they're instigating all this hate and right-wing fear, that we're going to actually have be in trouble with these people across the world.
You mean the Secret Service protection that we pay for?
Yes.
Yeah,
them,
okay.
Them
thank
especially.
You. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, my guess, Tony, this is a guess, is the president gets it no matter what. I don't think the rest of the family gets it forever. But I don't have a great answer because I don't know exactly on that, but I would assume the president would have the coverage regardless.
Terry in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950, which is where I was last weekend. It was just great. Terry, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Mark. A great show, a long listener. Mark, I had a chance to meet you this fall in Hastings, Minnesota at an Angie Craig meeting, and I brought up the issue about H.R. 303.
Refresh my memory, there's 6,000 bills that get
that, that is the Military Retiree Restoration Act.
Okay.
And what that does is it restores full pay for the retirees that have service-connected disabilities. Currently, how it is set up, if you have 50% or less of a service-connected disability, you still get a monthly check from the VA, but that dollar amount is subtracted from my retirement, my military retirement pay.
Yep,
50% or more, then it's not.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Terry. I just had someone from the Disabled Veterans of America come in and talk to us about this, so I know we're looking at it right now for this session. But yeah, we just had someone come through our office on this, so I do remember the issue.
Great. Nancy in Elkhart, Indiana, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes. Hello, Congressman. Thank you for being on for us. My question is, I have one question and one comment. I get very confused about when you're introducing the H.R. 1 because we get so much information sent to us from our local congressman. And can you explain to me what the local congressman is and how you can send something to us telling us that you are sending us the national H.R. 1?
So I think if I understand your question, Nancy, and maybe you can clarify, you're talking about like your local state legislator and there's bills that have, you know, like they're the first bill in the state legislature versus the federal. Is that what?
Or are you talking about your state, your U.S. representative in the House of Representatives in Indiana, who's a Republican, and he's sending you nasty information about H.R. 1, and you'd like to get the Democratic information? Is that what you're talking about, Nancy?
Well, no, the Democratic. But what I'm saying is, they will just say this is from Representative, and they will say this is from Representative, and they tell us what H.R. 1 is in our state, but they don't say it's from the state. They just say. Because, for instance, they'll just say, please, here's some information about H.R. 1. And then all of a sudden, then we'll get information from the national and people that are not politically educated. I think that people are getting very confused. And, for instance, when, like today, when you're talking about H.R. 1, some people would say, what, I just got information from H.R. 1, okay. And they're saying,
got it. Nancy, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we only have 15 seconds left. Congressman?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a good thing is find some trusted places that you get news, like from Tom, and that's the best way to get information around H.R. 1. If the confusion is around, there are state legislative proposals that might have similar numbers, but if it's a H.R. House resolution, I'm not sure how they do it in Indiana, but...
I think maybe she's also arguing it should have a fancy name.
Oh yeah, it does. You know, I should know the fancy name, Tom. For the People Act.
That's for the People Act. Okay, great.
You.
Great. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us today.
Of course, Tom. Thank you as always.
It's great. Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. With one of the great guys in the U.S. House of Representatives.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.